Now we're holding on Peg Gimel Amud Bey's the last line. And we learned yesterday about how Rabbi Elazar ben Shimon gave advice to a fellow who was catching thieves for the government, and how best to catch the guilty and not the innocent. And in the end, Rabbi Elazar ben Shimon himself was appointed to that job, and Rabbi Shimon ben Kofa criticized him, and so forth. So now the Gemara digresses. The Gemara is going to take back up the story of Rabbi Elazar ben Shimon on Pei Dalet Amud Beis. But meanwhile, the Gemara says, "Va'af Rabbi Shmuel v'Rabbi Yosi motiki hai ma'aser l'yadei." The same kind of thing happened with Rabbi happened with the same kind of thing happened with Rabbi Shmuel ben Rabbi Yosi. The same kind of thing where he was also appointed to catch thieves. In fact there's an excerpt that Iyun Yaakov on Ein Yaakov explains that it means the entire thing, including the point we had there where Rabbi Elazar ben Shimon is concerned that maybe he had gotten somebody innocent at one point, and then he was happy to see that not, and he did the whole experiment with putting out his fat out together with muscles and blood vessels, whatever, everything that had been extracted from him to see if it would spoil in the sun, and it didn't. So he realized that he must be a complete tzaddik. And so the Iyun Yaakov says, maybe when it says ki hai maisa, includes that point as well, that Rabbi Shmuel ben Rabbi Yosi did that as well, because as the Gemara is going to go on to explain, Rabbi Shmuel ben Rabbi Yosi was also very fat, like Rabbi Elazar ben Shimon. Anyway, so also the Yohu, so Pogabe the Yohu, so the Yohu met up with him. So here, before with Rabbi Elazar, you had Rabbi Shimon ben Korcha telling him off. Here you have Eliyahu himself coming and telling him, Omale, ad mosiat and moser amishalo lekenu lahariga. How long are you going to give over people of Hashem, Jewish people, to be killed? Because some of these Ganovim are Jews. Omale, so Rabbi Shmuel answers, my Eved, harmonid amalkuhu. So what should I do? It's an order from the king. Now, the original guy that Rabbi Elazar ben Shimon met up with gave the same answer. Rabbi Elazar ben Shimon, though, when Rabbi Shmuel ben Korcha called him out on it, he did not. He said a different thing. He said, "Koytzamani mechalam min hakeren." So what's the difference? Samar Shah says the difference is that guy, that guy Taka was appointed unilaterally by the king, and so was Rabbi Shmuel, as opposed to with Rabbi Elazar, he kind of got into it on his own by giving the advice. In other words, Rabbi Shmuel, when we say ki hai maisa osa v'yodei, doesn't necessarily mean that he met up with a guy and advised him, et cetera, and therefore he was appointed. Stam, he was appointed out of the blue. So therefore, all he can say is hamona de malkuhu, as opposed to Rabbi Elazar can't really say that, because then Rabbi Shmuel said, "What do you mean hamona de malkuhu? What'd you get yourself into this situation
Right.
in the first place
Meaning
for?"
that he knew he might get himself
He
into this.
might, it's a chance, I suppose. Yeah, that's how Marshall seems to learn. Ben Yoyodis has another point as well, that Rabbi Elazar, we said, knew he found out for sure that with it, he knew even to begin with that that all the people he's getting are guilty. Rabbi Shmuel ben Rabbi Yosi doesn't have necessarily that degree of certainty, but he's saying the fact is, I'm ordered to do it by the king. What am I supposed to do? So Eliyahu answers him, Avucha Oracle Asya, your father Rabbi Yosi at one point ran away to Asya, which is Asya is Asia in English. It's Asia Minor, which is Turkey. Back then, it was also part of the Roman Empire, just like Eretz Yisrael was, but in general, it was considered a bit of a safer area for Jews. Maybe the Romans particularly were harassing the Jews in Eretz Yisrael more than in other countries. Whatever, we find the number of Chachamim here and there who went to Asya for one reason or another to be safe, to be in a safer situation. So he tells him, your father ran away to Asya at Oracle Ludgia. So you, if you're in danger from the government, then run away to Ludgia, rather than continue in this job. So in other words, in short, he's telling him that that's not a valid excuse. Hamana de Malkuhu, get yourself out of the situation. Whether he ended up doing that, the Gemara doesn't say. But the Gemara continues. So now, having mentioned Rabbi Elazar ben Rabbi Shimon and Rabbi Shmuel ben Rabbi Yosi, both of them, we said, were very heavy set. So now, when the two of them would meet up, have a team of oxen could walk between them, but they have a nogabuhu and it wouldn't touch them because they were so fat, their stomachs stuck out so much that the oxen could pass underneath and just underneath the arches of their stomachs. Now the Maharal actually says that this and a number of other things that we're going to say in the Gemara over here are not necessarily meant literally. He says what it means is basically it's the Gemara's way of saying hyperbolically that a bit of a Lashon Guzma, that since their stomachs were bigger than normal, so much that we can't even compare them to human stomachs anymore. If we want to compare them, we have to compare them to oxen. Not in a derogatory way, of course. They're great chachamim, but in other words, to say that we can't even talk about it. You have a normal size stomach, a normal which can still be called which can still be related to other human stomachs, and then you have theirs was even bigger than that. So a certain matron, a certain Roman lady, tells them, "Bneichem enam shalachem, your children can't be yours. How could you have relations with your wives with stomachs that size?" Amrullah, the answer to her, Shalahen Gadol Mishalanu. Theirs are bigger than ours, which means Rashi says two possibilities. Either it means our wives have even bigger stomachs than we do, or Rashi's second explanation is their taiva is greater than ours. So she says, Kol Shekin, well, then all the more so, then how are you supposed to have relations? So now there's two versions of what they answered her. Ikadamni, one version is Hachi Amrullah, they quoted her a pasuk, Ki Chaish Gvurasai, according to a person, so is his strength. The context is the context is when Gideon is about to kill the kings of Midian over there, and at first he wants his son to kill them, and they tell him, no, you're a grown man. A person's strength is in proportion to his size. So if you kill us, it'll go quickly as opposed to your son. But the point is, in other words, so they use this as a play on words, sort of. The greater for the bigger a person, the greater is his gvura, meaning his eva tashmish. So therefore, yeah. So we have very large stomachs, but on the other hand, in proportion to that, the eva is large, and therefore we are able to manage it.
What happened in the Tanakh? Gideon.
So the story of the background over there is that Gideon had been fighting against Midian. He defeated their army, and now you have their two kings. He captures their two kings, and then he's about to put them to death. So he tells his son, "Go kill them." And his son is afraid to. It says he was a boy. So they tell him. So they tell Gideon, "You know what? Never mind your son. Ki chayish v'rasei. You're a man. You're right. Full grown. You're much more powerful." He did. The point is they're taking the pasuk a little bit out of context, they're using it. Yeah. So that's one version. Ikadamri, Hachi Amrullah, others say they answered her, Ava decheka sabasar, love presses the flesh, which we have in a ruchniastika level, the Altadeva talks about, we have it actually in Tanya these days, talking about how Hashem did Tzimtzum in order to create a world to make a Jewish people and so forth. So therefore, like the Ibishta compressed himself in order to be able to create a world where he could show love to us. Anyway, here they're using it in the sense that therefore, because we love one another and because we have such a taiva, therefore we manage to press ourselves, therefore we press the flesh aside and we're able to do it. So an interesting explanation in that is that what they're saying is, look, after all, obviously they have children, so necessarily you're arguing, you matrunisa with your goyish cup are arguing that they must have been mizana. But after all, if kreis and gadol mishalanu, or whether we say their stomach or their taiva is greater than ours, they must have managed it somehow. So the answer is, you're wrong. It wasn't anybody else. It was with us. But kaish gurasai or ava dechekas abaser, and therefore we made it work. One point is, the Maharal has a very long explanation over here that the point they're making is, with this and with the next piece of Gemara as well, is he says there's a common misconception that having relations is something low down and degrading and whatever, and not something appropriate to a human being. A person should be higher than that. And you have, and of course, in various Goyish religions and whatnot, they have where there's celibacy and all that. So they're stressing to her that no, it's not so. In fact, the greater a person, the greater their capacity for being able to accomplish tremendous things with their zivug, and therefore, no matter how physically big we may be, and no matter what, it's still the bosser, the gashmius thing that's pushed aside in favor of the ruchnius of it. Anyway, so
maybe the whole thing is just a mashal. Maybe they weren't that fat.
No, that's what Maharal showed. Well, that's what the Maharal was saying. They weren't fat enough for
the oxen.
That's
way
up. Okay, so the question is, the Gemara asks, "V'lomu lahu la'aduri lo? Why did they even bother answering her? Right. Doesn't the pasuk say, don't answer a fool according to his foolishness? So if she's going to come up with some shtus like that, why do they even have to answer? And the answer is Shalei Lahotzi Laz al Bnehem. After all, they don't want that there should be Laz on their children. If they don't answer her, then she's going to think, you know what, maybe it's a valid point. She's going to start putting out rumors person. And she's an important person and all that. So yeah. So the Gemara continues in this vein. The Aver of Rabbi Shmuel ben Rabbi Yosi was the size of a bag made out of skin that would hold 9 kavin. Now, what is Avre? So one way of explaining it would in fact be that it means the Aver, the Aver Tashmish that we are
that with children. By the way.
Well, wait. There are other explanations.
Okay. I guess and then, you would just use the other.
Yeah, and then again, the Maharal has a whole symbolic explanation of it that also refers to their capacity for the ruchnius in it. That again, it doesn't literally mean 9 kavin, but it means describing it in a philosophical / kabbalistic vein. Then you could refer to it as 9 kavim, and he goes in detail and explains what that indicates. With that said, there are other explanations. Other Rishonim, the Ritva brings that it means for example, like when you want to see how big and strong somebody is, like you measure their biceps or their upper leg or whatever. So Avery would mean parts like that. Not his Aver Tashmish, but rather, for example, he was so large and so muscular that you would measure his upper arm or his upper leg to see how big those are, and those would be the size of something that would weigh 9 kav, which in that case, it's large, but not outrageously large, basically. And then there's another interesting explanation, that Ben Yehoyada says it can mean also the amount of food that he would eat. The word Avre can be related to the, like you have the Sudas Havra that's eaten after a Levaya, and you have a few examples in Tanakh where that Shurish Beis Reish Aleph or Beis Reish Hay means to eat a meal. So therefore it would mean his meal would consist of 9 kavim. Tosfos, by the way, explains the reason why would the Gemara mention such points. So Tosfos says exactly that. Shaloi lahotzi laz. You have some people, other people in later times are like that also, are very big, and you don't want to be motzi laz on them. So now you're going to tell them, look, there were very, very great holy tanoim who were the same way, so don't look down on them. Anyway, so that was Rabbi Shmuel ben Rabbi Yosi.
You really can't look down on anyone.
Well, this is also true, but in other words, you know, you might think like such a fatso, you know, but no, we're saying that there were great tzaddikim who were like that. Papa says the Aver, however you define according to these different explanations of Rabbi Yechanan, was like a bag that would hold 5 kavin, others say only 3 kavin. Did a papa gufe, and the papa's own Avre was kijikuri de Harpanoi, was like the baskets that they make in the city of Harpania.
Which
so also large.
This
is the regular Rapapa in Chas,
but they're the fat.
There is also Rapapa Ba'aba, who's mentioned in Bava Kamma, who was extra large. It's possible, I think there is somebody who says that maybe it's referring to him, but on the face of it, we would say it means the regular Rapapa. And again, the Maharal gives over here in Chedrusha Agodis a long, long explanation that we see none of them say it about themselves. Each one is saying it about somebody else, and each one himself is somebody who's shayach to this. Right. So like each
and
one in
so, the so teacher of Ravashi.
Rav Papa is one of the teachers of Rav Ashi.
Yeah, but he was the Nasi before Rav Ashi.
Not the Nasi. He was one of the Rosh Yeshiva in the generation before Rav Ashi. The yeshivas were split up, and you had several different great Rosh Yeshiva. He was the Rosh Yeshiva in Surah. He was the Rosh Yeshiva in Surah before Rav Ashi. It is pretty. Of course, he was very big. Yeah. Anyway, so again, the Maharal makes a point over here. He discusses at great length the idea that we're not talking about over here literally. What we're talking about over here is symbolically, and each one is able to recognize the symbolism in the previous one, and even though each one himself has it in a lesser and lesser, in a bit of a lesser way. For example, we're saying that Reb Papa himself is only the size of a basket of Hapanya, and then he's recognizing something greater in Reb Yechanan, and Reb Yechanan can recognize something greater in Reb Shmuel, but Reb Yosi, so he has a whole arichos about what all that symbolizes.
It's like brain power or
So again, he's saying that we're talking about, so we are in fact talking about, he says, the what a person is able to accomplish in the world and expressed, among other things, in his ability to be able to, in his ability to be able to do periyavirivya and father children, but each one of them has a lesser degree of it, but nevertheless, each one still is shayach to this in some way. And he explains specifically how Panya, he gives an explanation based on a Gemara in Yevamos that the Gemara explains over there, that how Panya is Harsha Kol Poina Boy. It was an area in Bavel where everybody would turn to find Shidduchim, or because it was a low area, etc. And so therefore, like here, we're talking about something where everything, all the power of the body and whatever is expressed through that. The Gemara continues, Amar Rav Yochanan, Ano Ishtari Meshapiri Yerushalayim. I am left over from the beautiful people of Yerushalayim, yeah. Meaning not that he himself, Tosfos points out, he lived a couple hundred years after the Churban. What it means is that he's left over from the families of the people who lived in Yerushalayim before the Churban. He still has a vestige of their beauty.
So everyone was extremely beautiful.
So not everybody, but in other words, there were in Yerushalayim, there were particularly beautiful people. We find in Psukim as well. We find in Sefer, we find in Megillas Eicha, in Perek Dalet over there. We have Psukim over there, Sapir Gizrosam, and all kinds of a number of psukim describing how beautiful they were. So now Rabbi Yochanan is saying, you look at me, you can see a vestige of that beauty.
Do they have a explanation why we go from that story to this story?
But Patrick, since we mentioned Rabbi Yochanan's size, then we're going to talk about him. If you want to get an idea of the beauty of Rabbi Yochanan, nice kosa de kaspa mi beis silki, take a silver cup that has just come from the silversmith, so it's still very shiny, and it's still very shiny and beautiful, and even still glowing from the heat from it having just made from been made. Vinimalia partsidaya derumna, fill it with pomegranate seeds, the derumna nasumka, fill it with seeds from a red pomegranate. Vinahadulai, or it can also mean that seeds themselves should be deep red. Vinahadulai klila devarda sumka. Lafume, surround the rim of it with a wreath of red roses, the noisva ben shimsha latula, and place it between the sun and the shade, because in the sun the ben yoyod points out in the sun in the full sunlight it'll be washed out by the glare of the sun in the shade you won't see the glow as much, so you need some place in between. And ahud zahruri, when you see the glow, when you see the shine that comes from it, me ein shufre de Rabbi Yochanan, is a semblance of the beauty of Rabbi Yochanan. And the idea of this is, part of the idea of the Gemara mentioning this is for us to be aware of what we lost, should understand, at least on a gashmistical level, some of what we lost with the Churban, that here Rabbi Yochanan is saying, I'm only a vestige of that. And here you have at least a way of understanding what that is.
So that's a very red color.
Yeah.
I guess that was beautiful.
I guess that's because you see, you have
a beautiful color.
It is a beautiful color. You actually have, in Russian, the words for red and beautiful are very similar because they also.
And rouge. I mean, everybody puts rouge.
Yeah, there's that too. Yeah.
Not everybody.
Okay. Onward. The Gemara asks, Amy, is that so that Rabbi Yochanan was so handsome? Don't we learn in a braisa, Shufre de Rav Kahana me'in Shufre de Rav Abohu, the beauty of Rav Kahana was a semblance of that of Rav Abohu in a previous generation. Shufre de Rav Abohu me'in Shufre de Yaakov Avinu, which in turn is a semblance of the beauty of Yaakov Avinu. Shufre de Yaakov Avinu me'in Shufre de Odom Rishon, and Yaakov Avinu in turn is a semblance of the beauty of Odom Rishon, which, by the way, also means, it talks about Chassidus. It doesn't just mean the physical appearance. It means, the physical appearance reflects the spiritual one. Odom Rishon, we know, is the neshama klolis that incorporates with him and all the future neshamas. So was Yaakov. So therefore, I guess the implication is that so were, in a certain way, Rav Abohu and Rav Kahana and their respective generations. Anyway, Rav Yochanan is missing from this list. So therefore, he can't have been that handsome. The answer is Shaina Rabbi Yochanan de Hadras Ponim Lai Havyalei. The answer is Rabbi Yochanan did not have Hadras Ponim. Rashi says Hadras Ponim refers to a beard, right, as in fact we find in Masechta Shabbos, where exactly that, where Rabbi Yeshua ben Korcha says to a fellow over there who was making fun of him, he tells him Hadras Ponim Zokin, and you don't have one. So Rabbi Yochanan, because he didn't have a beard, then therefore he can't be in that list of the most beautiful people. But in other words, his skin glowed and shone so he can be considered very. He's a semblance of the beauty of Yerushalayim, but it's a different kind of beauty. Yeah. It's not the kind that we're talking about that Odom and Yaakov and so forth belong in that category. With that said, it is there are mephoshim who said, I mean, he didn't have a beard at all. It means like it was only very scraggly or something. He didn't have a full beard as we often find that people have. So the Gemara goes on, speaking of the beauty of Rabbi Yochanan.
Really big eyelash.
He also had very big eyelashes, which is relevant to the next piece. Yeah. Rabbi Yochanan have also the Yosef Ashari Tzvila. Rabbi Yochanan used to go and sit by the gates of the of where women would go to Toivol, of the mikveh. Omar, he says, Ki Salkan Benoisi Srom Tzvila Smitzvah, when Jewish women come out from Toiveling, Lifgubi, they should meet me first. Ki Hefidela Havelahu, Bnit Shapiri Kavosi. This way they should have children who are as beautiful as me, Ugmiria Raisa Kavosi, and that they're as knowledgeable in Torah as I am. Because we know that whatever a woman, the first entity that a woman meets after she comes out of Tevila has a very powerful effect on the children she's going to conceive with her husband. In fact, for that reason, you have a din in Shulchan Aruch that says that if she comes out of the mikveh and the first thing she sees is a goy or a dover tomei or whatever, better she should go back in and tovel again. And for that reason, you have, generally now, you have a mikveh lady, and one point is the mikveh lady, being a Jewish woman, is the first one she sees when she comes out of the mikveh, and that way she's seeing a dover tomei first thing. And Bechlal, as we know, in connection with Yaakov and the sheep, and in connection with other stories that the Medrash tells, in that connection, what a couple is thinking of when they're having relations has a tremendously powerful impact on how the child is going to be. So therefore, he's saying that therefore that'll have an effect on their children. So now you're mentioning the point that he had long eyelashes, as the Gemara tells us in Bava Kamma. Eyelashes, I think, whatever. Anyway, the Eitz Yosef points out that is how Rabbi Yochanan could allow himself to do that. Isn't he concerned that he's going to see them and have inappropriate thoughts about them? So one answer is because his eyes are covered anyway by his eyelashes or eyebrows or whatever. So therefore, it's not an issue.
And what was that Bava Kamma where they...
In Bava Kamma, the whole story with him and Rav Kahana, yeah. Tosfos actually points out, but Chlaldo, the Gemara tells us in Psochim, that it's not a good thing to meet up with a woman when she comes out from Tevilas Mitzvah. He's going to have Ruach Znunim. He's going to be beset by thoughts of Znus. So now, again, the Eitz Yosef's answer is that he didn't see them anyhow. Tosfos gives a couple of answers. One is you're talking about when he meets up with her, and here Rabbi Yochanan is sitting over there, so it's different. Or Tosfos says what it means is that Gemara is talking about if he meets up with her when she first comes out of the mikveh before she has a chance to get dressed. Here Rabbi Yochanan would sit by the gates, meaning they're already dressed and leaving, so therefore it's not an issue. Anyway. So
nowadays, if someone would do that, he'd go straight to jail.
Well, this is probably also true. But yeah. So they asked, the other Chachamim asked Rabbi Yochanan, aren't you worried about Ayin Hara? So there is Ben Yehoyada points out a question. What do you mean? What are you concerned about Ayin Hara? They don't see him all the time. They don't see him all the time in the Beis Medrash. Why all of a sudden would he be concerned? Why all of a sudden would there be a concern of Ayin Hara over here? So basically, he answers, in other words, that they're asking about this Ruach Znunim that Tosfos just mentioned, the possibility that you might be seized by a Ruach Znunim. Aren't you concerned about that? And he answers them as he's going to answer them in the Gemara. Omaluk, he answers them, Anom Izara the Yosef Kasina, I come from the descendants of Yosef, Dole Shalter, who ain't a bishop, the Ayin Hara has no power over them. And therefore, so his part of his answer is, according to Ben Yehoyada, he's saying that Yosef was able to conquer his Yetzirah, and that includes that he's not susceptible to this Ruach Znun. So as the pasuk says, Bein Poras Yosef, Bein Poras Alei Oyin. Yosef is a fruitful son Alei Oyin. And what is Alei Oyin? So there's a lot of meanings. It means by the well. It means by the spring, etc. Anyway, but V'amar Rabbo, Al Tikri Alei Oyin El Oylei Ayin. Don't read the pasuk that they're Alei Ayin on a spring, but Oylei Ayin, they transcend and they're above the eye. So they're not affected by the eye. Rabbeinu Chananel brings a gears. The Oruch brings from Rabbeinu Chananel that the word is Ali Oyin. We're not adding the vav to make Oyle Ayin, but we're saying Ali Ayin. Ali as in go away. Go away, Ayin. You have no power over the descendants of Yosef. Why is that? The Gemara mentions elsewhere that because Yosef controlled his eyes to not look at Potiphar's wife, therefore Hashem rewarded him with this, that his descendants are immune to the Ayin Hara.
That's the first thing you said about Olei Ayin, because when you say something,
so Olei Ayin would mean that they transcend, that they're above the eye. And Rabbeinu Chananel says it's Ali Ayin. Anyway, the point is, they're immune to Ayin Hara, and as Ben Yehoyada points out, they're also immune to the effects of this Ruach Znun. So therefore, I have nothing to worry about. Rabbi Yosef bar Chanina brings a different proof that the descendants of Yosef are immune to the Ayin Hara, because the pasuk says the Yidgul Aroi b'Kerav Aretz, they should be like fish in the midst of the land. So Mad Dagim Shavayam Mai Machasimo, some just like the fish are covered with water. Veina Ayin Shalatas Behen, and the eye has no control over them because you can't see them. You can't always see them under the water, and even when you do, actually, so the water refracts them, so you may see them in a different place than they actually are. Anyway, Af Zara Shor Yosef Veina Ayin Shalatas Behen. The same way the descendants of Yosef. Ayin Hara is immune, they're immune to the Ayin Hara, and therefore Rabbi Yochanan is saying, I can safely sit there, and I'm not worried about Ayin Hara. This that we're saying, by the way, that Rabbi Yochanan's skin glowed and had a special beauty to it, you have, for example, also, you have a Gemara in Brachas that tells that one time he visited Rabbi Lazar, wasn't feeling well, and the house was dark, because Rabbi Lazar was very poor, and he couldn't afford lighting for his house, and Galya Ledra, the Gemara says over there, Rabbi Yochanan rolled up his sleeve, and there was a light in the house, because again, his skin shone to such a degree that,
There's a lot of times it says about someone's skin showing.
Yeah.
Like Bas Sheva.
Yeah, also not Bas Sheva, Abigail. Yeah.
Abigail.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
Oh, Abigail, not Bas Sheva.
Yes. Okay. Onward. The Gemara says, Yoimachad have a kesochi Rabbi Yochanan b'yardina. One day Rabbi Yochanan was bathing in the Yarden River, Chazir Rish Lakish, and Rish Lakish saw him b'shovel the Yarden Abbasre and jumped into the Yarden after him. Now one point is he may just have wanted to meet him, but there is actually an interesting explanation, since we said before that Rabbi Yochanan did not have a beard, or at least not very much of a beard, and he was very beautiful, so there was an interesting explanation that therefore the Shlokish thought that it's a woman, so right. And he had a title for her.
I thought that was a standard explanation.
There is such an explanation. The standard explanation is that he wanted to meet him, as we're going to learn soon.
Oh, that's cool. Said. I didn't
realize that. So wait. Anyway, so Omalei, so Rabbi Yochanan says, "Chelach la'araisa, your strength, your such great strength of yours, ought to be used for Torah." He's saying, in other words, this power of the Yetzihara, when you use it. So Marshall explains, he tells him that this power of yours, this strength of yours, this you will use it for Torah, and it will be redirected to, and it'll be weakened from Dvorim Gashmiim, and it'll be used for and it'll be used for Torah. So he answers him back, your beauty is appropriate for women, meaning in other words, either you should be using it to attract women, or your beauty is the kind that women would more be expected to have. In Chassidus, by the way, it talks about the idea of why it is that that women are physically more beautiful than men is because they come from a higher source in Ruchnius. So Rish Lakish appointed that as saying to Rabbi Yochanan, your beauty is coming from that level. Amalei, so Rabbi Yochanan answers him, if you come back, if you do tshuva, then I will give you in marriage my sister, who is even more beautiful than me. Now, this is an interesting statement. If you return, that implies, in other words, that he had been in this state before. So Tosfos brings from here, and Tosfos and a few other places in Shas points out various other proofs that Rish Lakish originally had been a Talmid Chacham. Then he went off the derech. So that would also explain why he wants to meet Rabbi Yochanan, because he knew Rabbi Yochanan from the past, and now therefore Rabbi Yochanan can tell him he had doubt about. In other words, if he had never been a Talmid Chacham, the expected explanation would be ikablus aloch, if you accept on yourself or something. Hadras Bach suggests that he had originally been a Talmid Chacham, and then he went off the derech and became this listim.
You would even have to know that Reish Lakish is Jewish.
Yeah.
I mean, if he was a bandit, you might not be able to tell that right away. So that's more evidence.
Maybe not. I don't know. Yeah. Be that as it
support.
Yeah. Be that as it may. The point is that according to now, not everybody agrees with that, but that is what Tosfos says. Incidentally, when we're mentioning his sister, by the way, it's worth mentioning. Doris Arishonim points out, when you think about it, this sister necessarily had to be older than Rabbi Yochanan. Because the Gemara tells us in Kiddushin that Rabbi Yochanan's father passed away after he was conceived, and his mother passed away in childbirth. So therefore, Sophia, so his sister has to necessarily be older than him. Anyway, so Kabbalah lay, so Rish Lakish accepted
was
on himself.
Was Rish Lakish older than him too?
No, Rish Lakish, in fact, was probably younger than him. There's a Yerushalmi someplace. Doris Rishonim refers to a Yerushalmi where Rish Lakish said the reason why I have any degree of Chochmah and Torah is because one time I saw Rebbe from a distance and I saw his hand sticking out of his sleeve, and that slight view of Rebbe gave me the ability to have tremendous Chochma and Torah. Now, meanwhile, Rabbi Yochanan, we find, was a Talmud of Rebbe. He was one of the junior Talmudim. He was all the way in the 17th row in the back, the Gemara says in Fulin. But nevertheless, that implies that Rabbi Yochanan probably was older, and therefore, so he would have actually been able to see Rebbe face to face. No, Rabbi Yochanan would have been older. Therefore, he would have been able to see Rebbe face to face as a Talmud in the yeshiva. Whereas Rish Lakish would have been a little kid, and he saw where Rebbe one time walked down the street, and he saw part of his head.
Wow.
Yeah. Anyway.
I was not familiar with that. You were showing me.
Yeah. So Boi Lamed, Dorus Rishonim does a great job of collecting together all the material.
Yeah, right.
Anyway, Boi Lamed or Lasui Mone. So now Rish Lakish wanted to run to jump back to where he had been originally to get his clothes. Boi Motzi Hoder, and he wasn't able to because now that he had accepted on himself that he's going to learn Torah, then he feels weak and he doesn't have the ability to jump the way he did before. Torah, the Gemara elsewhere points out, the Torah is called Tushia Shemateshes Koicha Shel Adam. Because it weakens a person. The Zohar has an expression, took for the gufa chosha de neshmasa, the strength of the body involves the weakness of the neshama, and vice versa. So now that he's putting something into his neshama, so therefore his body now is physically weaker and he's not able to jump like he did before. Tosfos, by the way, also points out that now you have later on in the sugya, we're going to learn tomorrow about Hashem on Daf Pehe, there was a case where somebody was offered also a daughter of a Talmud Chacham in marriage, and the Gemara says, according to one view, he didn't accept because he didn't want people to say, Bishvil zu chozer zeh. You don't want people to think he only did tshuva because of her. Here, Rish Lakish apparently didn't care about that and did, in fact, end up marrying her. So Tosfos doesn't explain why there would be the difference, but maybe one point is because here it was a private matter. He was just between the two of them. Not everybody would know that was the reason. Whatever the case, So Rabbi Yochanan taught Rish Lakish Mikra and Mishnah, Veshavya Gavra Rabba, and eventually he made them a great Talmud Chacham. There's a lot else about this, and in one of the notes over here, they bring something from Pirkei de Rabbi Eliezer that Rish Lakish had two partners in crime. The three of them used to rob people together. Now Rish Lakish became a Baal Teshuva, as we're saying over here. The other two continued with where they were when they all came in front of the Beis Din Shamayla. Rish Lakish is being sent to Gan Eden, and the other two not so much. And they were saying, how is that right? And the answer is because he did Teshuva and he became a Talmud Chacham, and you guys stayed as you were. There's a number of stories here and there, and then Yerushalmi have several stories where even afterwards, Rish Lakish was still tremendously strong, and he still had the Ganovim over there had a certain fear of him. The Yerushalmi tells a story, for example, where one time the Yerushalmi tells a story, for example, that one time Rabbi Yochanan was mugged and had his wallet stolen from him by some Ganovim, and when Rish Lakish found out, he ran after them and yelled at them to stop, and they were so afraid of him hearing his voice that they stopped, and he made them return all the money.
And there's also the one in Gittin,
where he wiped out the Ludim, although Tosfos says over there, evidently that was before he did Teshuva. He wouldn't have behaved in such a way. He wouldn't have gone and sold himself to the Ludim after he came back to being a Talmud Chacham. So Tosfos says that must have been during his intermediate period when he was off the Derech. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. But there were things that said that it was after.
I'm not familiar with them, but could be. Okay.
Oh, yeah.
Anyway. All right.
We'll have to wait for
Onward.
5 years.
Onward. Yom Echad, having many, many years passed. By the way, the Gemara makes it sound as though this happened shortly after the other one, but in fact, Rabbi Yochanan and Rish Lakish both lived long lives, so this was the next part of the story is many, many decades later. Yom Echad, having Miflegi Bei Medrasha. one day they were arguing in the Beis Medrash. You have like this, a bunch of weapons, hasayif, a sword, vasakin, and a knife, vapigyon, and a dagger, vaharoimach, and a spear, umago yod, and a hand sickle, the kind that you use for harvesting grain, umago kotzer, or the larger kind that you use when you're harvesting a large amount of grain. All of those things, all of those are kalim with metal blades. At what point in their manufacture are they makabel tuma? Mishas gmar melachtam. So from when the work of making them is finished. And now we have to define what is considered gmar melacha. Tosfos actually refers to that there's actually a Mishnah in kalim that gives different things when you sandpaper them, when you sharpen them or whatever. So Tosfos says that's talking about when they became rusty and now you need to renew them. Here we're talking about new ones that are made from scratch. Anyway, so at what point is the gmar malacha? Rabbi Yechanan Omer Mishit Sarfim Bakivshan. Rabbi Yechanan says once they're fired in the oven. So, in other words, what you do is you pour the metal into a mold or something. Afterwards, you put them in the oven to have like their finishing.
I don't think they bang them out.
Whatever it is. Anyway, the point is. So there comes a point where they refire them in the oven. So at that point, Rabbi Yechanan says they're finished. Rish Lakish and Rish Lakish says you have one more step after you take them out of the fire. Then you put them in water. The water helps strengthen them, but it also helps polish them so that they have a shine. So Rabbi Yechanan says to Rish Lakish, listab listiyose yada. The robber knows his robber. Now, how could he? In other words, he's saying because you used to do this kind of thing, therefore you're familiar with these kinds of. Hold on. So therefore he's saying because of that you're familiar more with these kinds of things. What's the gemara malacha? In fact, there's an idea that we find actually in psukim. Even we find that there are times when the pasuk makes a point of the glint of a weapon itself is part of like you have your a soldier or robber or whatever is using a weapon on somebody. The fact that it has a gleam itself is part of the psychological thing that it makes it.
Sword.
Yeah, exactly. So therefore, so Rabbi Yochanan is saying to Rish Lakish that you know these things now. On one level, yes, it can be. So on one level, it can be, in other words, a compliment that he's saying. In other words, listen, you know, when it comes to knowing Torah, it's not just enough to know the facts as you find it in the Sfarim. You also have to know how it works in the real world. So therefore, he's complimenting Rabbi Yechanan. He's complimenting Rish Lakish that you taka are familiar with this kind of thing. Because a number of Mephoshim deal with the question, isn't this a Nas Dvarim? We learned earlier in the Masechta. You can't say to a Baal Teshuva, Zechor Ma'asecha Rishonim. So how could Rabbi Yochanan say such a thing to Rish Lakish? So yeah, that's one of the answers is in fact that he's telling him that he's trying to compliment him and tell him, I have to agree. You have a valid point because you know in these things, you're more familiar with these kinds of things than I. However, Rish Lakish took it the wrong way. So Rish Lakish answers, honestly, what kind of benefit have you given for me? Before they called me Rebbe when I was the head of the Gazlanim, they called him Rebbe. Rabban Shalistim, Rashi says. Sometimes we find in Shas that the word Rebbe means a leader or a master or whatever, rather than a Rebbe as we think of it. So then they called me Rebbe. And Hocha Rebbe Koruli. And now in the Yeshiva, they call me Rebbe. Now, one possibility is that's what he means. In other words, that they used to call me a leader, and now they also call me a leader. There is also, Tosfos says, this is another proof maybe that he was a Talmid Chacham before, and then he went off the derech, because Tosfos says that Rebbe can actually mean that literally they called him Rebbe. They were familiar with the listim, were familiar with his past. They knew that previously he had been a Talmid Chacham, and therefore they called him Rebbe in token of that. Anyway, how could Rish Lakish say such a thing? Does he not realize that it's much greater to be a Talmid Chacham than not? So again, if we say that he was a Talmid Chacham from before, then he's saying to Rabbi Yochanan, you really didn't do that much, because eventually, listen, I started out as a Talmid Chacham. Eventually, I would have come back to it somehow or other. So therefore, you didn't. So therefore, what you did for me is not necessarily such a big thing that you should have the right to put me down like this. Where again, he thought that Rabbi Yochanan is putting him down. Another point is another
shows you how.
It shows how you have to be careful with what you're very, very careful with what you say. Yeah, very much so.
Because you can set someone off and then it's all...
Yeah.
And these are tzaddikim.
Are tzaddikim, indeed, yeah. Ben Yehoyada gives an explanation that by Hocha and Hossam, he doesn't mean over there when I was with the robbers versus over here in the yeshiva. He means, as the Gemara often uses, Hossam to mean Bavel and Hocha to mean Eretz Yisrael. So in other words, he's saying, That Rabbi Yochanan is thinking that, you know what, all the honor that I have here in Eretz Yisrael is because of him, because I'm his brother-in-law. So then, since Rabbi Yochanan is the lead Talmid Chacham in Eretz Yisrael, so therefore I'm kind of in his reflected glory. So he's telling me, you should know something. Hossam, there in Bavel, you're not their Rebbe, and yet they also have tremendous derech eretz for me, and they call me Rebbe. So it's not only because of you. So that's that. And then the Maharal in Chiddush HaGadus makes a point also what Rish Lakish is saying is, look, mitzvahs lav lahanis nitnu. So therefore, you can't call it a hana that you brought me to learning Torah. Anyway, Omalei, so Rabbi Yochanan answers him, ahanoi loch da akravinach tachas kanfei hashchina. I did you a benefit in that I brought you under the wings of the Shechina by making you a Baal Teshuva and a Talmid Chacham. So now, again, according to the Maharal, the vote is, he's saying, fine, mitzvah slav lahonis nidu, but when it's a complete transformation, min akotze al akotze, in what kind of person you are, then yes, that can be called a hanah. So therefore, so don't say maya honestly. In fact, it is a tremendous hanah that you were transformed into a whole different kind of person. Anyway, the Gemara continues, cholash daita did Rabbi Yochanan felt bad about. And one point is that again, you have the various explanations of what Rish Lakish meant with Maya honestly, but on the other hand, at least on one level, it means sounds like Rish Lakish is saying that there's no better benefit in being a Talmid Chacham than anything else, and that's a tremendous bizarre natura. So therefore, Rabbi Yochanan felt bad that after all these decades, Rish Lakish still feels that way. So cholash Rish Lakish became sick. Asoy Achse Kabachia, his sister, which as we said before, Rabbi Yochanan's sister, married Rish Lakish, came and was crying in front of him. Omrele, she says, Asay Bishvil Bonai, at least daven for him for my children's sake. So I'm not an almana and they're not Yisayim. Omrele, so Rabbi Yochanan answers it with a Loshana Pasik, Ozva Yisaymecha, Ani Achaye. Leave your Yisayimim, I will keep them alive. In other words, don't worry about your Yisayimim, I will take care of them. I will take care of them. She says, Asay Bishvil Amanusi, do it for the sake of my own widowhood, so I'm not left a widow. Yeah, so she says, he answers her, so she says, Asay Bishvil Amanusi, do it for the sake of my widowhood, at least so I don't become a widow. Omala, so he answers her with the continuation of that pasuk, Va'amune Secha, Olai Tivtochu, in context, as Hashem saying, but he's saying, in other words, he's saying on himself, your widows can rely on me. In other words, you can rely on me that I'll take care of you. Now, how could he do such a thing? How could he be so on the face of it, achzoriastic, as not to forgive Rish Lakish? So the Maharal says that actually, it doesn't mean that she actually came to him. What it means is, the Maharal explains this part of the story as follows. Rabbi Yochanan had a kapeda on Rish Lakish, and therefore Rish Lakish became sick. But nobody realized that one thing led to the other. Everybody knew that Rish Lakish was sick, but nobody knew the cause of it. So therefore, we can talk about it as if it would have been appropriate for Rabbi Yochanan's sister to come crying to him to be meichel her husband, but in fact, she did not because...
Yeah.
So in fact, she did not because nobody knew that Rabbi Yochanan had anything to do with this. But so the Maharal explains, in other words, that it means the Gemara is not saying what actually happened, but what would have happened, basically. In other words, the idea is Rabbi Yochanan's kapeda against Rish Lakish was so great that therefore, even if his sister, who was also Rish Lakish's wife, had come to him with these pleas, he wouldn't have listened to her. But not that in fact she did, because where Rabbi Yochanan is going to be an achzori like that, he's not going to be meichel, because nobody put two and two together to realize that one thing caused the other. There are other explanations as well, which is basically that Rabbi Yochanan and figures he has to stand up for the honor of the Torah. If Rish Lakish is going to say, what good does it do to be a Talmid Chacham? That's a horrible thing to say, especially for a decades-long Talmid Chacham, like Rish Lakish, and therefore Rabbi Yochanan would have figured that he can't be moichel such a thing. Anyway, noch nafshe did Rabbi Shimon Lakish. Rish Lakish eventually passed away. Rabbi Yochanan felt very bad because all the time he and Rish Lakish had been learning together. As we find throughout Shas, where they're discussing and arguing things together, and in fact, there is an explanation. So, Taka, why didn't he daven for him? Is because he figured, for example, in the story of Kahana and Baba Kama, yeah, it was an inadvertent thing. He hadn't realized there it looked like Rav Kahana was making fun of him, and here he was. And here the fact is, there was a justified reason to be upset at Rish Lakish, and therefore he didn't feel he had the power to daven for him. So now Rabbi Yochanan felt very bad. Omru Rabbanan, so the Chum said, actually, Ben Yehoyada says a very interesting thing about this. Ben Yehoyada says that what happened was, Rabbi Yochanan figured, you know what, I understand that I'm partially at fault over here because I first said something to Rish Lakish that I shouldn't have. So fine, you know what, better let it be then that I will pass away and Rish Lakish will become the next Rosh Hashiva. So therefore, so rather than davening for the whole thing to be undone, it's not Ben Yehoyada says this. Somebody says this. I saw it just before, but I don't remember who. But in any case, the point is, he says that. actually, no, I'll tell you. The Tzidkas HaTzadik says this. The Reb Tzadik of Lublin says this. He says that after all this back and forth and everything, Rabbi Yochanan now figured that, you know what, the best thing to do at this point would be that I'll be gone from the world and Rish Lakish will take over as the next Rosh Hashiva. In the end, it didn't work out that way because in the end, in fact, Hashem caused that Rish Lakish passed away first, but that wasn't his intention. His intention would have been that Rabbi Yochanan would. He thought that what happened? I called Rish Lakish a lister. I called him a ritzeach, and I was over on that to be over on that. You're not supposed to remind about Shuvah of what he did originally. Therefore, he figured that now I'm going to have Chaver Nena Shal Yada. Hashem is punishing him through me. Therefore, I myself am going to be. That's going to be held against me in the Yeshiva Shomayla. So he figured I'm old anyway. I'm not going to live very much longer. So therefore, it must be Hashem maybe arranged all of this in order that I'll soon pass away and Rish Lakish will take over. Meanwhile, in the end, it didn't work out that way because unfortunately, Rish Lakish passed away first. So the Reb Tzadik of Lublin makes that point. Anyway, so Omer Rabbanan, man leza leis for the daite. So the Chum said, who should go and make Rabbi Yochanan feel better that Rish Lakish is gone? Nezer Rabbi Elazar ben Pedas. They decided Rabbi Elazar ben Pedas should go. The Machadid in Shmaite, he's sharp in Torah. He's able to discuss Torah very well. Also Yosef Kamei, so he went and sat. Now, meanwhile, Rabbi Elazar by that time had been a Talmud of Rabbi Yochanan for decades by that point. But here we mean, in other words, that he went to take over Rish Lakish's place. Whenever Rabbi Yochanan would say something, Omale, Rabbi Elazar would tell him, Tanya de Messiah Loch, there's a braisa that supports what you're saying. Until finally, Omar, Rabbi Yochanan says, Ak Kabar Lakisha, do you think you're like Rish Lakish? Bar Lakisha, Kiava Aminim Milsa, Bar Lakisha, Rish Lakish, when I would say something in Torah, have a Makshavi Estin Rabba Kushlasa, he would ask me 24 questions, Farikna Estin Rabba Peruki, and I would have to give him 24 answers, Omamela, Rav Hashmaita, and therefore the Torah would be very, 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 very wide and very, very clear. The whole idea would be very, very clear. But after Amr Tani the Messiah Loch, you're saying that you can bring Brises to support me. Otu lo yadayna de Shapir Kamina. Don't you think I know that I'm saying correctly? I don't need proofs. I need challenges. Have a also a korah money. So Rabbi Yochanan now is going and ripping his clothes. Now for the first time, he realized before he hadn't realized what he had lost with Rish Lakish. Now for the first time, he realizes, in fact, Maharshal says, not only that, it means, in other words, now he realizes for the first time that in a certain sense, Rish Lakish was his Rebbe. He had learned so much from Rish Lakish, and now he realizes that he's lost his Rebbe, so therefore he's tearing Kriya. the kabochi va'omer, it was crying and saying, "Hecha'at bar lakisha, hecha'at bar lakisha, where are you, bar lakish?" He was crying until his mind left him. The Chachamim davened for him for Rachmanus for Noch Nafshe, and he passed away. One point is that one point is, what do you mean? They can't be Menachem Avol him or something. The fact is that every time he would remember, there's a vote from one of the Balei Amusar, of Chaim Shmulevitz, that says the problem is every time he'd remember again that Rish Lakish is gone, he would go through the same thing again. They would never be able to, even if they could comfort him temporarily, eventually he would remember again, and eventually he'd be back to where he was. And therefore, they realize the only possible thing for him really is at this point that he should leave the world. The Yerushalmi actually tells that last part of the story. So it says that there was a period of 3.5 years when Rabbi Yochanan was not regularly coming to the Beis Medrash. And Doris HaRishonim connect that with the story after Rish Lakish had passed away. Mm-hmm. Then one day, the Chachamim had a dream that tomorrow Rabbi Yochanan is going to come to the Beis Medrash and teach us a new thing in Torah. And the next day he did. So when we're saying over here, shof midaita, doesn't mean he went crazy, Rachman al-Otzlan, but it means like there was a period of time when he couldn't be among them and teach them Torah until finally he rallied one last time and taught them. Anyway, yeah, one of the things we see from this story, of course, is the importance of being careful with your words, because we see what serious things came from that. The Reb Tzadik also makes the point over there earlier in his piece. He says, since we said before that Rabbi Yochanan is from Shevet Yosef, so Shevet Yosef, as we said, has tremendous powers of the eye. They're immune to the Ayin Hara. On the other hand, with that comes also that they have a tremendous power of Gvura, that they have a tremendous power to be able to where they have Rizkot Drabbanon, it's called, where the Gemara says the Talmud Chacham becomes angry and it has serious consequences, and therefore we hear that and then we see that over here that came out in Rabbi Yochanan, the descendant of Yosef. Now the Gemara gets back to the story of Rabbi Elazar ben Shimon. So in short, we said Rabbi Elazar ben Shimon was concerned that he had innocent people killed. He did the whole experiment with facts and found that it's not so. So now the Gemara continues. Nevertheless, Rabbi Elazar ben Shimon did not want to rely on that das that for sure everything I did was correct. Therefore, kabbal ala yisuri. Therefore, he accepted on himself yisuri. The yisurim consisted of that he was going to have infected wounds, basically, as the Gemara was going to say. Bala Batish, you could say it was a result of that operation they did on him that it didn't heal properly. But in any case, we're saying over here that he voluntarily accepted that on himself. And one idea is the yisurim of a tzaddik. The Gemara mentions in Brachas that the yisurim of a tzaddik can be, and in other places, that the yisurim of a tzaddik are mechaper for the whole generation. The Gemara is going to give an example of it later on. And yisurim shal ava are ones where they don't interfere with learning Torah, as he made sure that his don't. Anyway, so So in the evening, every evening they would put underneath him 60 mattresses. Or 60 sheets or whatever to absorb all the blood and pus that would be coming out of him. Rashi actually translates namti as felt. They would have 60 layers of felt to absorb everything that's coming out of him. And safra, but in the morning, still so much blood and pus would have come out overnight. Nagd mitutis shit and mishichli dom of a kiva. They would be taking out from underneath him 60 basins full of blood and pus that came from his wounds. So, in other words, as much as the felt layer was absorbed, there was still so much more. On the face of it, 60 is a guzman. The Gemara does often use 60 in that sense. On the other hand, Ben Yehoyada connects it with. Later on, we're going to learn in a different part of the sugya that the based in Shamaila, when they punish someone, they give shitin pulsi dinura, 60 malchus, right. And we'll learn tomorrow, Best Hashem, why dafka that number. So therefore, the 60 over here may be meant literally. He was literally given malchus min hashamayim as these yisurim that he took on himself. And therefore,
how are we going to get through this? We're going slow.
Okay, we'll do as best we can, I guess. Yeah. So Lamacher Abdullah Dvesu Shitin Mini Lafta. The next day his wife would make him 60 kinds of lafta, which it actually describes as some kinds of as a food made out of figs, so like a soft food appropriate for a sick person. But Ochalahu Bari, he would eat them and he would feel much better. However, his wife would not allow him to go to the Beis Medrash. So that the Chachamim don't pressure him. She was concerned for his health. She may have also been concerned that the Chachamim are going to have it in for him for what he had been doing when he had been catching the thieves. So therefore, she didn't want him around them. Then in the evening, he would tell his Yisurim, my brothers and my friends come. He had accepted them, Me'ava, so therefore he says he can call them my brothers and my friends, meaning, in other words, that here, the 60 is actually from Ben Yehoyada, not from Ben Yehoyada, from Marsha. Marsha says, since the Gemara later on says that they are shitting posted in order, so therefore over here you have the 60s. Anyway, so yeah, he's calling them Achai V'Re'ai because he accepted them, Me'ava. So you tell them every evening, come, but Safra, in the morning, Amalahuzilu, we would tell them, go away, because you're going to prevent me from learning Torah. So he can't go to the Beis Medrash, but he's learning Torah at home, and therefore, so this is, and the Gemara defines in Brachas, that is the definition of Yisur and Shalava, is where a person makes sure that it doesn't interfere with his learning Torah.
You know, aren't supposed to be careful with your body? And
you're supposed to be careful with his body, but in this case, Rabbi Lazar figured that he needs this for his kapara, for his body. In fact, it's going to have an effect on his body, and that it'll make sure that his body doesn't decay after he passes away. So therefore, so he was able to take that on himself. Yoim Achad Shama Dvesu. One day, his wife heard him saying that. Omrele, she says, you're bringing it on yourself. I thought all this time it's just you got sick. Now I realize you're voluntarily bringing it. You're using up all the money that I brought in from my father's house, between the food, the laughter, and between all those felt, between all those layers of felt and everything. So she rebelled for Oslo Beis Nosha, and she went back to her father's house. Who's going to take care of Rabbi Lazar now? 60 sailors came to visit Rabbi Lazar. Tosfos brings from a medrash, they had been there was a storm. While they were on their ship, they'd been attacked by a storm and they were in danger of drowning. Right. And they made a neder that in the schus of they asked Hashem to be saved in the schus of Rabbi Lazar Rabbi Shimon, and they were, and therefore now when they were saved and they came to visit him and give him.
Comes from what word?
Sapunoi comes from the Sfina. So people are going on a boat, yeah. They brought him 60 slaves with 60 purses, so plenty of money to give him. And they made for him 60 kinds of laughter. And he ate them. So in other words, Hashem arranged for somebody to take care of him, even when his wife's not around. One day his wife tells her daughter, Zili Boki Babuch, go check out, go see Boki, actually it's in Moshe Bekir Sviyadiya. Go see, go examine how your father is faring. Maika Abida Edna, what he's doing now. Astia, she came, Amalah, so Rabbi Lazar told her, Zili Imri Le'imach, go tell your mother, Shalonu Godom Shalahem, ours is greater than theirs. Meaning, in other words, we have even greater wealth over here than you. You were complaining that I'm using up all the wealth that you brought in from your father's household. But you should know now we actually have greater wealth than we actually have now greater wealth through these sailors that Hashem sent us. There's also an explanation in the Sefer Ma'ayoneh HaChochma that makes a point. He's saying yours is a gashmi stick of wealth. My wealth is ultimately based on Hashem, and Hashem giving me through my Torah, and Torah is a greater wealth. As you have a famous story, for example, of that fellow who was on a ship, a Talmid Chacham was on a ship together with a bunch of merchants, and they asked him, what do you do for business? And he says, I learned Torah, and they're all making fun of him because they have all merchandise, and then all their merchandise gets stolen, and he meanwhile goes to the city where they arrive and becomes the Rav over there. So, Torah can never be stolen. So therefore, he's telling her in the same vein, then, my wealth is greater than yours.
Where is that story?
It's a story in the Medrash. It's a story in the Medrash. Anyway, Chori Anapshe, Rabbi Lazar, applied to himself the pasuk, Hoisa Karniya Soicher. She's like ships that carry merchandise. Mimercha Tavi Lachma. She brings her food from afar. Meaning, in other words, he's saying in the same way, in the schus of my Torah, I was able to bring food from, I was able, Hashem was, Hashem arranged for me for food from far away, that Hashem supplied me even when it didn't seem begashmius that there would be any way to do that. And that pasuk, the whole Oz Yosh, the whole Eishes Chayil, Rashi points out, is talking about the Torah. Therefore, that pasuk is also talking about the schus of his Torah. Marashah, by the way, also points out over here, you have a pasuk in Tehillim that expresses this kind of thing. The in the capital Ayin Gimel, I'm injured all day. And my tofacha is in the morning. So he says that hints at the story over here, where Rabbi Lazar is constantly in pain and everything, but labkorim in the morning, he gives tofacha. He says to the pains, go away, I need to learn Torah. So the Gemara continues, Ocho v'shossi ubari. So after he ate the laughter, he felt much better. And he ate and drank and felt better. Nofak l'bei medrash, and he went to the base medrash. Because now his wife's not around to prevent him. They brought to him 60 samples of blood where women had discharges and they weren't sure whether they're the right color to become tame, because there were only certain shades of red in principle that are tame. Nowadays we don't have that level of expertise, but back then they had taharinu, and he declared them all tahor. All the Chum were questioning it, the Omri, and they said, is it possible? How could it be out of 60 of them? There's not one single suffix. So he tells them, if what I'm saying is correct, and all of them are Tahir, and these women are now going to have relations with their husbands, you call them Schorim. All of them are going to be boys. And if not, then at least one of them will be a girl. Why is that? Why would that be appropriate? Marashah says, because girls themselves are going to grow up and have damnida, whereas boys will not. So he's saying if they were all tahor, then it means there will never be another suffix from these children who are born. Yeah. Sure enough, this is Marashah says that. Sure enough, they were all boys, Vasikul Lahu, Rabbi Lazar al Shmei, and they were all named Rabbi Lazar after him, or maybe the word Reb doesn't come over here, because they didn't all call them Reb Elazar, they just called them Elazar. Although the Maharal says it doesn't literally mean that there were 60 boys born like that, but it means like he became much more famous in the world. Like from now on, his name Reb Elazar became much greater as a result of the story. Tanya, so now we learn in a Braisa, Omer Rebbe, Kama period Verivia, Bitla Rishah Zumi Yisrael. Look how much period Verivia this Rishah prevented from the Jewish people. Which Rishah? Rashi's first explanation is Malchus Rishah, the wicked Roman government, where they made Rabbi Elazar ben Shimon, they appointed him as this one to catch the Ganavim. So all that time he had been coming into the Beis Medrash. So all that time, there would have been also shilas like that. It's not just that on one day there were women had shilas. All the time women would have shilas like that. And until now, he wasn't there to answer it. So now, look how much period of Rivia. Until then, they had to consider themselves Tomi Misafik. So therefore, look how much the Malchus HaRashah prevented Jewish women from doing period of Rivia with their husbands. Then Rashi brings a second explanation that the Rishah is referring to Rabbi Elazar ben Shimon's, Rabbi Shimon's wife, who prevented him from going to the Beis Medrash. However, Hagoyis HaGrah takes that out, and one point is, one reason why to take it out, further on, it says later on that Rebbe proposed to marry her after Rabbi Elazar ben Shimon passed away. We'll learn tomorrow, so that's the Shem, or we'll learn later on this Amud if we get to it. So if he's going to call her Rishah, he's not going to try to marry her. Before Rabbi Elazar passed away, so he says to his wife, I know that the Chachamim are angry at me for what I did with catching the Ganavim, that now you have, they may be, some of them are relatives of the Chachamim. There's also an interesting point. We said before that what was his advice was to go into the taverns and see if somebody's sleepy in the morning and so forth. So now you could have, for example, imagine that there was a Talmid Chacham there. They wouldn't kill him, but they would at least arrest him and interrogate him. So there were Talmid Chacham themselves who went through a hard time as a result of this. Anyway, he's saying, I know the Chacham are upset with me, but I'm asking to be Shapir, and when it comes to my Levaya, they're not going to give me the proper honor which would be appropriate to him as one of the greatest tzaddikim. So he tells her, don't bury me, hide my body in the attic, don't be afraid of me. Now, how could you do that? There's a mitzvah, Marsha points out. After all, there's a mitzvah to bury a body. So he explains like this. Since the Gemara explains in Sanhedrin, there's two reasons why the Torah gives a mitzvah quota. Is it because of bizoyin, or is it because the body is going to rot, or because of kapara? Now, he already had gone through, he already knew his body is not going to rot, as the experiment before, so he didn't need that. As far as kapara, he doesn't really need, because the Yisurim had cleaned up anything that he had done, so therefore he doesn't need, so therefore neither of those rules apply, neither of those reasons apply, and therefore he can have her keep his body over there. Also, Maharsham makes another point. You're allowed to delay a levaya because of covered amnes. And here it's precisely for his covered, because he knows the chachamim are not going to give him the appropriate covered. And part of the problem is not so much that he's looking out for his covered, but it means more that they are going to be, it's going to be held against them in Shemayim. Why do they not honor the Tanner of Elazar Reb Shimon appropriately? So therefore, so he tells her, put him in the attic. Reb Shmuel Nachmeni says in a later generation, Ishtoyli image Reb Yonasan. Reb Yonasan's mother told me the following. The Ishtoyla Deveso de Reb Elazar Reb Shimon. In turn, Reb Elazar Reb Shimon's wife told her the story. Loy Pochus Mitamni Srev, like Fame Esther Trenchin, and no less than 18 years and no more than 22. So maybe she didn't remember the exact number, but it was somewhere between 18 and 22 years. Ognisi, Elisa, I kept Reb Elazar's body in that attic. He have a salikna. Whenever I would go up there, my nina leba mazie, I would look at his hair. He have a mishtamt binisimine, and if even a hair fell out of his head, have a osi dama, blood would come out of where it fell out. So showing, in other words, that he still has tremendous chayus in his body, even long after he had passed away. One day I saw a worm crawling out of his ear. I felt bad. He's supposed to be immune to the worms and all. So then he appeared to me in a dream that night. Omali, and he tells him, Loy midihu, don't worry about it, it's nothing. What happened is one day I heard them making fun of a Tamad Chacham, of a young Tamad Chacham. I was not moicha as I should have been, which may even mean he was moicha, but not in the way right. that he could have. So now, midika negin mida, I heard with my ear him being made fun of, and I didn't do anything, therefore now this worm came out of my ear. But it's a one-time thing, you don't have to worry that's going to happen again. Why did Dafka happen that time? One possibility is that the Mefroshim point out a couple of possibilities. Either that day the Talmud Chacham himself had passed away, so therefore now the whole case is being reviewed in the basement, the whole life is being reviewed in the basement of Shamayla, and this came up. Or maybe this was the anniversary of when it happened, and therefore it's being reminded, therefore it's being remembered in the basement of Shamayla. The Gemara continues. When two people would come for a din Torah after the laws of Reb Shimon had passed away, they would stand by the door. Each one would say his part. And a voice would come from the attic and declare which one is liable and which one is not. Now, Torah Lo B'Shamayim, but one point is, in other words, that in the presence of Reb Elazar Reb Shimon, like they were afraid to lie. So therefore, like the truth would come out just from their own words. The Gemara says, Yom Echad have a kaminsia dvesu b'hadi shibavda. One day, Reb Elazar Reb Shimon's wife was arguing with one of the neighbors. Omer Allah, and the neighbor said to her as a harsh statement, Tehei Kabaila, you ought to end up like your husband, Shalanitan Lekvoda, who wasn't buried. Amri Rabbanan, so the Chum said at that point, Kulahai Vade Live Urach Ara. At that point, when it becomes so well known that he's passed away and hasn't been buried, then it's not Derech Eretz that people should know about it. Now, part of the point is because he had been sick for many years, he hadn't been seen much in public. So therefore, the fact that they didn't see him around for a long time didn't occasion any comment. But now that this neighbor lady even knows of it to that extent, then the Chum figured it's now at this point, it's not the covered dick. The whole point why we delayed the burial was because of the covered. Now it's not really the covered dick anymore to continue this way. Ikadamri, another version, Reb Shimon ben Yochai ischazoi lehu b'chalma. Another version is that Reb Shimon ben Yochai appeared to them in a dream, Omer lehu, and he tells them, Pri da'achas yeshli b'neichem, I have one precious dove among you, v'iatim reitzim la'avia elai, you don't want to bring him to me, why don't you bury him together with me? Either way, the Chachamim went to deal with the burial. We'll finish in a couple
minutes. Now, where are they
going to read? We'll see soon in the next few lines. But the people of Achbarayah, who it's pronounced, whatever, mm-hmm. The people of that city who lived nearby would not allow it. All those years that Rabbi Elazar Reb Shimon was sleeping and resting in his attic, no wild animals ever attacked their town. And the reason is, Maharsha says, the connection is because the Mishnah in Pirkei Avos tells us, Well, if they're going to him for Dine Torah, and he's wow. saying what the facts are, and therefore nobody ends up swearing falsely, so therefore there's no Chayus Rois. Yeah. So they didn't want to let it. So it came out of Yom Kippur, have a treaty. The people of Akbaria are busy getting ready for Yom Kippur. So at that point, the Chum grabbed the opportunity, shot it up on the Bay Biri, the Bnei Biri. The Chum sent word to the people of Biri, which is a town near Tzfas. In particular, it has another famous claim to fame in Jewish history. The Beis Yosef completed right in the Shulchan Aruch there.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Anyway, Baskul Arse, they took his mitzvah, they took his coffin, and they brought it to the Ma'ara in Miron, to the cave where Rav Shimon Yochai is buried. They found a snake surrounding the Ma'ara and not letting anybody in. And the snake is in a circle over there with its tail and its mouth, and therefore, yeah. They said, Achna, Pischi Pich, open up your mouth, the Iconis Ben Etzel Ovid, let the son come to be buried together with his father. Pasach Lahu, so the snake opened up and let them in. Showing, in other words, that not everybody belongs in there. Marsha points out the symbolism is, it represents, as we know, there are the famous people in Jewish history that loy meistu ela be'etish al nachash. They passed away only because of the nachash akadmoni, not because of any averus of their own. So now the nachash being there is representing that point, because Rabbi Shimon and Rabbi Lazar had gone through their whole experience in the cave there, the famous story in Gemara Shabbos, and that cleaned up anything that they may have done wrong. And here Rabbi Lazar had also gone through Yisurim. So therefore, he's only passed away be'et yishal nachash, and therefore he deserves to be buried with Rabbi Shimon. So sure enough, that's where he's buried. And yeah, even now, when you visit Miron, you go into the building over there, and you have Matsavis over there with the name of the. Well, right now, unfortunately, nobody's there because of
Pesach Sheni.
Indeed. Actually, you know what? Today being Pesach Sheni, Nishtok and Farfalin is very appropriate for the story of Rish Lakish before having a second chance in life and becoming a Baal Teruva.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Anyway, so the Gemara continues. Sholach Rebbe the Daba Beishtoi. Rebbe sent a messenger. He wanted to marry Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Shimon's wife, as his widow. Shochale, she sent back. Klish and Ishtamash by Kodesh, a keli that was used for Kodesh by Rabbi Elazar. Yishtamash by Chol, should the mundane be using it? In other words, you're not of the caliber of Rabbi Elazar. Tamon Amrin and Eretz Yisrael, they had a moshul they would say about this. Ba'asa de ba'asar de morid besa tola zayne, in the place where the master of the house used to hang his weapons, Kulbaraya, the miserable shepherd, Kulsetola, hangs up his bag, his sack, his backpack, or whatever that he uses when he's pastoring. In other words, the same idea. In other words, she's saying, I was the wife of Rabbi Lazar, a great tzaddik. You're not of his caliber. Shalach law. So he sends her back. Nehidim a Torah, God of many. Sure, he was greater than me in Torah. The Avol Meisim Tovim, be God of many, is greater than me in Meisim Tovim. Don't at least I have that advantage over him? Shochale, she sent him back. On the contrary, but Torah mea godim choladayin. Whether he's greater in Torah than you, I don't know. You're saying that he is, so I'll take your word for it. B'maisim yadayin. As far as maisim tovim, I do know der kavla le yisuri, because he voluntarily accepted on himself yisurim. And the Yisurim, the Medrash says that he would say, in other words, when he would call on the Yisurim to come every night, the Medrash adds that he would say, all the Yisurim of the Jewish people should be on me. So that's Meisim Tovim, he's doing tremendous things for the Jewish people.
Stuff,
yeah. So therefore, she's saying, you're not of his caliber. And we'll continue tomorrow, and we'll learn in what way we find that Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Shimon can be said to be greater than Rebbe in Torah. And the Gemara is going to point out that this is tremendous on Nivus of Rebbe to say this and to accept this from Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Shimon's wife, because in fact, maybe he even was the greater one. But that'll be tomorrow, Beis Hashem.